Joe Presents TKO.
Welcome to TKO on Joe. I know what you're thinking. We're not supposed to be back until 2020. Last Friday, we had a chat with Carl and a sit-down review of the year. But after what happened at the weekend with Anthony Joshua, I couldn't not sit down with the man to my left. Angel Fernandez is a name that you will know across the circuit if you're a boxing fan. He's gained a lot of recognition in the last couple of years, coached some very good professional prospects, Isaac Chamberlain, Sultan Zaubek as well, as working with amateurs on the GB squad, Jordan Reynolds, Sandy Ryan too. However, this year, arguably, was your biggest task to date, because after that terrifying nightmare night in New York for Anthony Joshua, at some point, and I don't know the story to this yet, you were brought in as part of the coaching setup to help make a few adjustments and to prepare him for a very successful rematch in Saudi. First of all, many congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, thank you for joining me, because you must be knackered.
I'm tired, but thank you, you know, for the opportunity to allow me to come to your show, man. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Pleasure's all mine. So just for a bit of context for people listening and watching, we come up to the EIS in Sheffield to film with Fraser Clark. Now, obviously, you and I have been friends for a little while.
Yeah, for a little while.
But you had to keep your involvement a complete secret for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Now, in the world of boxing, that's not always easy, because there's a lot of gossip and people, word travels fast, especially when we're talking about the highest profile name in the sport.
Yes.
And I saw you with AJ talking and showing him a few things, and I was thinking, what is going on here? And you sort of smiled and winked, and then you made the kind of the gesture like, keep your mouth zipped. And I thought, wow, we've stumbled across the big secret project. So, take me to the top. A, when did you first meet AJ?
Yeah.
And when did you first get the opportunity to start working with him?
It was kind of like way before Ruiz's fight. I remember I was watching TV, you know, at home, and I kind of like scrolling Instagram, and all of a sudden, Anthony Joshua started following me. And I'm like, nah, that can't be right. So I said to my girlfriend, Josh is following me. I was just kind of like all excited. And I was thinking, this guy's going to unfollow me. You know, like 2 days later, will unfollow me. So I start kind of like saying, you know, appreciate your follow. You know what I mean? Champ, best of luck in the fight. And he said, thank you so much. He's been very kind of like welcoming to me as well. And I think like a week after the fight, or kind of like a few days after the fight, he contacted me and he said, can we just like sit down? My team is going to contact you. And then we just went from there, really. We start kind of like the conversations with his team going on.
Which fight was this? Was this the Ruiz fight? Or was
after the Ruiz fight.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And kind of like the combos kind of like lasted quite a long time, because, of course, the guy needs some rest. You know what I mean? He was in New York at the time as well. I was ongoing talks with the team. And I went one Saturday, I remember, to do like a session with him. And then I went in on Sunday and that's it. He went out quite like it. I'm just going to be honest. Let me talk to Rob, you know, with the team. And then they just come back with the news. You're saying, listen, we want you part of the team. So,
because one of the most impressive things that you seem to have the ability to do, you've done it again with AJ, was with Isaac Chamberlain in between the Lawrence Okolie and the Luke Watkins fight. It was only about 7 or 8 months.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't start working with him straight away, but the stylistic changes. So I sat ringside with Boazzi and watched that.
Yeah.
And we were both like, how has this guy made this many changes to his style and put them in so effortlessly? And that was when we started talking more about your influence as a trainer, and we were watching videos and sharing stuff. And obviously your philosophy, you're Spanish by heritage, but your philosophy is kind of grounded in the Cuban school of boxing.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, I wouldn't say Cuban, because to be honest, yes, I learned from Cuban coaches, but I pick what I think is right. I learn on a daily basis for so many coaches, you know. If I like some of the stuff, I'll go, you know, I might implement this into my training. But over the time, I'm constantly changing. But I've got a system of work. So Monday, I do one thing, and every single day reflect what is going to be the following day. So when it comes down to Thursday, they will know what they've been doing on Monday and Tuesday. So everything kind of like makes sense. But at the same time, you have to kind of like adjusting new things, you know, in order to the style of the boxer, really, because I don't really have an actual style. I consider myself a kind of like very technical coach. I quite like the angles, you know, like balance, footwork, movement, and then really just kind of like have the basis with each individual and then build from there, because every single boxer has got different styles. So
talk to me about that fight in New York. I imagine you watched it live, but then you would have studied it many, many times after that.
To be honest, I mean, Joshua, don't get mad. I didn't watch it because I was with Sultan in Cardiff. So I fought with Sultan in Cardiff on that day. And I was so knackered. I tried to stay awake and I completely fell asleep.
Yeah.
The following morning, I woke up and I kind of like scrolling the phone and I'm like, no.
Mad.
Wow. And Chris, I swear to God, I just felt something running through my body. And I think, this man is coming to me. And I remember going on Monday to the gym and people came to me and put hands on the shoulder and I said, you know what? Be ready for what's coming. And I'm stuck kind of like, this is the best thing that you could ever happen to you. And I'm like, no, come on. And then look where we are now.
Thing is, they do talk in boxing about career-defining wins, but I often think about certain fighters, you can look at career-defining losses. Canelo Alvarez against Floyd Mayweather is probably the most prominent example in the last 20 years because he got outboxed and schooled by a smaller, physically weaker guy who showed him what the sweet science was. And I kind of feel like there are parallels with this because Joshua is the biggest, strongest fighter in the world. Yeah. But when you come up against somebody who's got hands like Ruiz, an IQ like Ruiz, a chin like Ruiz, there were a lot of lessons learned that night.
Yeah.
And I guess in hindsight, given the performance at the weekend, you can categorically say that was a career-defining defeat for him because in defeat, you have to either make adaptations and change or you ultimately fail. So when you first had the conversation with Josh and with the team, what were those conversations revolving around? How did you feel like you were going to fit into the team?
It's not kind of like really how to fit into the team or anything like that. It's the training. I was thinking, I mean, this is what I could bring to you, you know, same thing with the other trainer, Joby, and same thing with Rob. And one of the first things was when we went to Sheffield, the three of us sit down, you know, we watch the Ruiz and Joshua fight. We watch other fights of Ruiz and we just put a plan together. You know, we said, this is the other points, the key points to beat Ruiz. Do you agree? Yes. What you think? Is there anything that you could add? And it was a teamwork, absolute teamwork. And since that day, every single day was based on that particular plan.
Mm.
And Shatter the Night, he's just like... He nailed it. I mean, fair play to Joshua because at the end of the day, I don't believe that is the coach that makes the boxer, is the boxer who makes the coach. So fair play to Joshua, you know, because all the kind of like the glory and everything has to be to him because the amount of people that criticize him, you know, that he cannot move, his footwork is not good and the movement is not good. And I think he proved a lot of people wrong, you know, on Saturday night.
Especially some of the fights that he may have ahead. I mean, Deontay Wilder goes without saying, you can't stand in front of someone like Deontay Wilder and catch shots.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't think perhaps people realised how ferocious a puncher Andy Ruiz was and how quick he counters in combinations.
Yeah.
And each shot is heavy and fast and accurate. And although Josh's hand position is pretty responsible, he was getting caught with a lot of shots, a lot of variety. And it, again, you say, when you look at someone like Tyson Fury, whilst he's not the most offensive fighter, what he does do is take a lot of the sting out of shots with the way he moves his feet. But I have to say, even though I said this to Si and the producers, the very first day we saw you in Sheffield, I had this rush of adrenaline because I rate you so highly and I knew that your involvement and just in terms of the movement, which is what Josh perhaps needed, was going to potentially be that extra 1 or 2% that could be the difference. And I had full faith that he could do it once I saw that you were involved. And I think the one thing that I worried about was stylistically, you know, Rob, like all trainers, they trust in their methods.
Yeah.
They back themselves to the hills. And Rob has a proven track record with Karl Froch and AJ. And he's done a lot for GB in terms of the medals they've won at the Olympics, 5 in London, 3 in Rio, 3 in Beijing. But stylistically, you guys are quite different.
Yeah.
What's one of the biggest challenges, finding a kind of middle ground between the way he coaches and the way you coach?
I mean, for me, it was a completely new, different way of training.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it actually made me a better coach than I was yesterday because I was pretty much feeling comfortable, you know, in my environmental, you know, with my boxers, with my people surrounding, constantly supporting. So for me to go to Sheffield, being a new environment with different coaches around, different boxers, you know, it made me a better coach. And the thing is, I had to adjust. It's not kind of like what I was going to bring. The plan, it was done by Mark Ellison, you know, every single time, you know, and that's what we followed. And the thing is, you know, there were days where I was doing the training, there were days where Joby was doing the training, there were days where Rob was doing the training, or you do the warm-up, I do this part, I do that part. And it's down to Joshua to absorb, you know, what each individual brings onto him. Mm. And again, he's shown on Saturday night. It's not kind of like a me thing or a Rob thing or Joby thing. I think the three of us play a big, big role, you know, into the training. And it was down to Josh to absorb what I'm teaching him, what Rob is teaching him, and Job is teaching him. A lot of people were saying, oh God, three coaches, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But
how did Josh feel about that?
He never kind of like, it was thinking at the beginning, of course, he's kind of like, let's see how this is working.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He actually worked. He actually worked because the respect that we had from each individual was, you know, respect always has to come first. And you cannot bring any egos, because if you start bringing egos, you know, when you have three coaches, that's going to be very problematic.
Mm.
So for me, I'm not there yet. So for me, it was a great opportunity, and I'm grateful to Joshua and the whole entire team, you know, to allow me to be part of the team. So I have to go there and just do what, you know, the best of my capabilities, really.
Let's talk about Ruiz and the dangers, because in that first fight, there were moments where Josh was in control.
Yeah.
He was landing big shots. But it seems to me, and even in the fight at the weekend, Ruiz is, you can hurt him once, but if you go for the second phase, he's got this amazing ability to recover from a hurtful shot. And not only to do that, but to be incredibly dangerous during that second phase. So what was it that you felt Josh needed to change in his approach to the fight?
It's not really kind of like the changes. As I said, is the plan that we said at the beginning. We cannot engage with this guy. We knew he's very fast with his hands, but one thing that Ruiz hasn't got is footwork.
Mm.
He's very flat.
Yep.
And if you look all the training he does, all the pass that he does with his coach, Manny Robles, which I rate very highly, is going towards the ropes all the time. So we knew that if Joshua was going to go in straight lines,
you're going to follow,
that was going to be a danger.
Yep.
So what we made with Josh, he was like always coming off on a diagonal, off on an angle, doing lots of laterals, semicircles, and the whole sparring, the whole training, like the pads, the technical training, everything was with those key points.
Yeah.
And he nailed it. Again, it was done to him.
Carl was preparing for Tyler McCreary 2 weekends ago, and he's Philly Shell, so he always exits to the left, spin and exit to the left. So they were getting Carl to feint and then step across, and he's drilling that motion again and again. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, yeah, you know what? And there was a couple of times in the fight where he tries to exit and Carl just shuts it off and then goes again. And in that first fight, Joshua was going back and keeping hands high, but when you watch Ruiz, he'll feint and then he'll come forward in two phases.
Yes.
And so unless you go back three times, and the problem with going back three times, you hit the ropes.
Yes, yes.
And so to see the change in his movement so early, and I think as well the weight loss, which nobody really predicted. We knew he'd come in a little bit lighter, but did he just completely abandon the strength and conditioning stuff, or did he just streamline it in a totally different way? Do you know much about that?
I don't think he actually really did abandon, but I think he prioritized a lot more boxing into this training rather than the strength and conditioning. But what people doesn't realize as well is in the first fight, he was preparing for a different man. You know,
or 320 pounds. Yeah.
A lot slower, you know, a lot stronger guy.
Mm.
And to kind of like change those adjustments in a small period of time, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It was very hard, you know, very, very hard. And he knew what he needed to do for the next fight. And
because people forget that, don't they? I mean, like Oscar Valdez nearly got beaten at the weekend by an opponent 24 hours notice.
He
was supposed to be on his undercard.
Yes.
And it's very easy to say, well, he's the champ, he's had a 10-week camp and he's fit. But if you haven't prepared stylistically and then you get someone in front of you who you just haven't planned for, it's as hard for you as it is for them.
Yeah.
But, of course, you have everything to lose and Andy Ruiz has everything to gain.
Yeah.
At what point in the camp did you were you sort of keeping an eye on the kind of clips that Ruiz was posting, any training things, any movement? Because I sent you a couple of bits and said, look at what he's doing here.
Yeah.
Like, he was little, like, faint, step off to the side, create the angles. And you just said to me...
We were watching all that sort of stuff, you know. I mean, they were sending videos. We were watching kind of like a lot of videos of him on his fights as well.
Yeah.
But not always what he does good. It's also as well, you have to see the weaknesses. We knew the weaknesses were going to be there. But look at the strengths as well, you know, what he does good, and take that away from him. And that's what Joshua did on the fight, taking the things away from him. Because if you get static is when you allow Ruiz to start giving you the angles, you know, once you get close to the ropes, he could start turning you to either to the left. But I think this time in a lot of video clips, he was going, and he was giving a lot kind of like angles going to his right. Mm. So that is something that I haven't seen before. So they were probably preparing for other sort of fight, but Joshua, I think he just did not allow that to happen.
Mm. What was that sort of light bulb moment for you? At what point in camp did you look at Joshua and think the game plan and everything we're working on is starting to really click? How far out would you say?
I would say the last 4 weeks.
Really?
The last 4 weeks, he started to kind of like put in really good sparring, you know, the training, the atmosphere, the whole team. And I think it was kind of like when we actually as well went to Saudi, and the whole team having breakfast together, having lunch together, having dinner together, and that created a positive environment because all of us, we get on with each other. And Joshua was very, very calm, very relaxed. The sparring partners play a massive part into this because they were such a great guys, always helping. Some people within camp were saying, oh, you got to throw this, you know, you got to throw that. There were times where I was helping them in the corner, you know, just throw this, throw that. And seriously, the sparring he was putting, and he was getting better and better and better and better and better in the moment. And I thought, this guy's going to do it.
So you had a Mexican guy, Tim Moten, this US guy. He's got this great...
Elvis.
Yeah, and you had Andrew Trevitti.
Yeah, Andrew Trevitti, super fast, talented guy. You know, he would definitely be a world champion.
He's an animal too.
Yeah.
Study his tank,
as well, you know. Michael Espon, Derek Tesora. He came, Tom Little as well.
Yeah.
So...
skillful guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Little's got underrated skill set, actually.
Very, very good sparring partners. Always there to help. And that's the thing, because sometimes with the sparring partners, they just probably go there just to kind of like get a bit of fame, you know. But they actually were there to help the man, and that play a key part.
Okay, we'll come on to the fight in just a minute. We're just going to go to a short break first, because while Angel got back from the desert, the main man from House of Rugby, James Haskell, has just got back from the jungle.
I mean, I haven't like sobbed uncontrollably since I was a kid.
Right.
I sat in the snot, but I mean, not far off, you know.
We saw one in Tokyo on one big night. And...
yes.
Yeah. And I sobbed. I put my head on her lap, my head on her chest, and I just cried. Like, it was so overwhelming. And then I basically requested to go in and support Caitlin because she had no one there. For, you know, obviously all her kids are extremely busy. Her sort of confidant and business partner, Sophia, is, you know, running a multi-million pound company. So she couldn't be there. So I just said I wanted to come in. So every morning I came in and lived that kind of roller coaster until Caitlin came out. Then I met her just over the bridge, and then she cried when she saw me, made me cry. So all in all, it's been a pretty emotional few weeks.
It's a really good episode, that. Check it out, House of Rugby on Joe. Back here with Angel Fernandez. Let's talk about the night of the fight in Saudi then.
Wow.
So you are... a couple of hours. I just got little goosebumps on my arms. Do you know what? I was nervous all week.
Wow.
And I had that feeling because I guess it's the, you know, he was in such an amazing position.
Yeah.
And then it shows you how on the knife edge you are as the heavyweight champion of the world at all times. And so there was so much to regain, but everything to lose.
Yeah.
What was the mood in the camp? How did you feel in the sort of the afternoon leading up to the fight?
Great. Seriously, like very, very positive. We went for a walk midday, all his friends, you know, the team together, you know, just like relaxing. And he seemed very, very, very relaxed. He never kind of like felt the pressure of the magnitude of the fight. You know, oh my God, this is maybe himself, he might kind of like think these things, but to us, he seemed a very, very calm person. And I just actually knew from weeks before how everything was going, that man was going to do it. Absolutely was going to do it.
So how many of you in the, because there's quite a big entourage there, but how many people, when you're sort of sitting down to eat and you're in groups, how many of you are there and what's the mood like generally?
Probably like 15 people at a time, you know, even more. And then when his friends came in as well, he seemed very, very relaxed, very relaxed.
Because there is a point, and I only know this from being with Boazzi on fight nights, that everyone becomes a little bit more respectful of a fighter's privacy and space.
Yeah.
And there is a point where it gets quieter and quieter, and then all you can hear is the crack of the pads as they're warming up in the gym. Yeah. And there's this silent tension where everyone's trying to look calm because they don't want to exude any nerves, but you know everyone else is feeling that tension. Talk to me about the build-up to, because there must have been tension and fears, maybe not from Joshua, but for like Freddie Cunningham and all the guys from AJ Boxing and Rob and yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, kind of like when we were there in Saudi, the way how you see this thing, how you see things, how you see things. And I was like, he's going to do it. But the funny thing is, the 2 weeks we were in Saudi, from when we was going to training, the music, positivities, the atmosphere. I remember Tabiti's brother, every time we were already waiting for the sparring partners, he was coming through the door and he was like, and Joshua used to love that.
Really?
And kind of like, he loved that kind of like atmosphere, that positivity. And he's like, wow. And that's what we kept in the changing room. So when Josh came into the changing room, we put the same music as the music that he was going to come out with. You know, the whole thing is like, come on, you know, don't worry. Yeah. And he seemed very, very, very cool. Very, very cool.
I did hear that he's a guy that sort of really feeds off energy and he likes to have people around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And he sort of is a better version of himself when people are there. So it's interesting to hear that. Like, it was a long time from the ring walk, especially as challenger too, because we forget that he's had, I can't even remember, 6-7 defences as champion before New York. So he's been used to walking last. And then once he walks, his entrance is the thing that takes a long time. But once he's in the ring, things get underway pretty quick.
Yeah.
But you had his ring walk, which was very long. Ruiz's, which was very long. You had the Mexican national anthem, which seemed to take about 4 minutes.
Yes.
You had the US national anthem, the GB national. And it's like, this is
crazy.
He was waiting for, I was thinking, I mean, my heart was going. It says a lot about his mental strength that he can remain cool through all of that and still stay focused. And I would say this, for all the huge sort of the pyro and the fire and the lights that he's not used to at Wembley, he seemed much less emotionally invested in his ring walk than he normally is. There was like tunnel vision. Is that what the impression you got as well?
Yeah. He was very, very determined to do the job.
So
very determined.
And so the bell goes for the start of round number one. And instantly you can see the difference in the movement of the guy. Now, take you back to what I was mentioning, the Cuban schooling, because I watch a lot of amateur boxing, as you might know. And the one thing the Cubans do brilliantly is they force people to reset by they move in one direction. They almost feint a step left and then they step right again. Yeah. And it causes this constant like reset and frustration. And against a power puncher who needs to set their feet like a Wilder, like a Ruiz, it's very difficult thing for them to have to deal with somebody who's constantly on the move. That was the game plan. And you were confident that Joshua could do that for 12 rounds, right?
Yeah, 100%. Because we saw that in the sparring. And when I was just there in the corner and I started looking round after round, I promise you, Chris, it's exactly the same, but the same as he was doing in the sparring.
Wow.
I was just thinking, this guy is just doing another sparring session. And I remember I did say, listen, today is going to be another sparring session, but different opponent. So just do what you have been doing, and that's what he done. The thing is, it's not kind of like you go, when you start looking at the fight, and I wish you could be watching the sparring because it was exactly the same. The movements, the turnings, the feints, the jabs, exactly the same.
Yeah.
So the repetition in everything is key. And that Saturday night, he proved that.
His jab was the best it's ever looked. And the way he would just step in, pick it, and then come back out of range. Yeah. Always thinking feet first with everything that he did.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of times where he would just feint, draw the lead, and then he would walk Ruiz onto a jab, move off to the left, just turn with him. All the little subtleties that you, as well as I do, know how long it takes to become autopilot. That doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
That's a really... And, you know, people were looking, going, oh, he's just moving well. It's like, no, there were a lot of pretty technical adjustments that he had to make. There was a right hand that lands in that first round.
Yeah.
that he turned right through.
Solid right hand.
I mean, I don't know what Ruiz's chin's made of, mate, but he's not going to get hit. But a bar like a right hand from Deontay Wilder, and I would like to see it because I feel like he's a very hard man to hurt.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because that right hand landed and you saw the cut open immediately.
Yeah.
As a fighter, that's a positive mental boost. Yeah. You cut a guy with a clean punch. But then instantly AJ, he missed with the second right and then he just was a little bit short with the left hook and he just got tagged with a glancing left hook with Ruiz. And I remember thinking that was the perfect time for that to happen because it was a good warning sign for Ruiz, but for Joshua, it was that reminder of New York and of don't get greedy because that second phase is when you can get hurt.
Yes, and he didn't. He kept his discipline. But one of the things that, again, you know, with the sparring and everything, and we were nailing, like Rob, myself and Joby, where discipline and focus are the key on this fight. And he kept it for the whole entire 12 rounds. He never got greedy. Maybe at times that he wanted to gain both a bit.
Yeah, that's him.
Kind of like he was just looking at the corner and like, okay. It's kind of like, I just know what I just done, you know. And then he was getting back into that range, you know, back into the jab. So fair play to him, you know, fair play to him.
Yeah. So in the corner, yourself, Joby and Rob, who of course is the main man, did you sort of agree previously, would it just be Rob talking in the corner? Were you guys just sort of confer in between rounds and then Rob pass it on? How did that work?
100%. You know, you cannot, in a world title fight, I mean, you can't really go and three guys talking because that will confuse the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were doing that in sparring, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do that. And we reinforced that on fight night. You know, Rob does the talk and Rob said, if I just go like that, you can say something. So kind of like maybe towards the end or at the beginning, you know, I could go, that was a good run. That is what I'm talking about. That's good boxing. And then Rob talks, or during the fight, you know, just like Joby saying something as well, you know, beautiful, things like that, just to encourage the guy. So, but once on that minute, it's one man talking, because if you have two guys, that could confuse Josh's mind.
The way he is throwing the right hand is a little bit different. And I know that's something that you sort of had a little bit of input with and you've been working on. He seems to be turning through it a lot more.
Yeah.
How long did that sort of take? Did you make any sort of little adjustments with Josh? Like, what did you work on?
It's not kind of like...
Do you want to... let's have a break.
That's okay. It's not kind of like... Don't forget that Joshua has been training since summertime.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not just a 3-month training. Yeah. Joby had his bit. I had my bit and Rob had his bit. And I don't really kind of like, probably would like to go into detail of what I do or what I kind of do, but I just let my work talk for itself.
Yeah.
I like my guys to definitely turn into the shots. But that also, Joby does exactly the same, you know, because the pads, if you see the pads with me, if you see the pads with Rob, and also kind of like the pads that we're doing with Joby, he was really start turning into those right hands. And at times, of course, he was like the right hand maybe short, but we'll repeat again. So Rob would say slightly longer. So because he was like from the outside watching this, okay, we'll just make it longer. And just like, boom. So if you look at the times that he missed, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 times within the fight that he wanted to be greedy with our hand, but he missed, but he turned automatically straight away out of danger. So
yeah, he got his head safe, moved.
He didn't got stuck in there. And that's where the danger would have come, but he missed and boom, constantly turning. So fair play to him.
I wonder whether, even though he's a stone and a half lighter, that he might be actually almost hitting with more spite because the shots are flowing. His body looks so much looser and so much more relaxed, whereas there was tension, and that comes with musculature.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking to James Haskell just because they're recording House of Rugby and he's going to have his MMA debut. And you kind of look at him and you think one of the things that will help the flow of the shots is to just let that muscle just drop off you a little bit. And I guess at his level now, with the opponents that are on the horizon, whether it's Pulev, Usyk, Wilder, Fury, he's going to need the combination of speed and footwork that he showed, but the power that he clearly already has. Yeah. Are you taking him on the pads? Just describe the power to me. Can he hurt you with both hands?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. mad power.
Yeah.
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 I mean, Joshua is mad powerful. And especially when we was trying to punch as well, right hands to the chest.
With the body shield on.
Fainting, you know, step to the left and boom, right hand to the chest. Oh my goodness me. I mean, and one time I remember that I put the power, I had the body belt on me, and it kind of like nearly hit my rib. And I'm like, whew. I actually felt that because I remember people from the outside were saying like,
yeah,
your face kind of like actually felt
that. It's actually scary, yeah.
That would have gone in. That would have break me. But it's mad powerful. Even with the round pads, the way when it was turning and sitting on the punches, if you were to hear that, you know, poof. That's when they were throwing those right hands on the wrist. I was thinking, I mean, this guy is made of metal or something.
Because
any heavyweight with that right hand would definitely go down.
Yeah.
Definitely.
100%.
Definitely. And he actually hurt quite a few people in his sparring with that right hand as well. But Ruiz, you know when you're going to fight a Mexican, you know you're going to go for a hell of a fight. Because those guys, you hit them, but it's just they got so much inner strength that they will keep coming forward.
Bizarre, isn't it?
That's what Ruiz done.
But I do wonder whether we've now seen like the optimum balance for AJ in terms of weight and performance, because as you say, that power, and this is where I always think about people like Usyk, Holyfield, Hay, let's say great cruiserweights that come up to be good at heavyweight. You have to have, if you're a small guy, you have to have something a bit different. Yeah. And I looked at Hay and I always remember thinking that going over 16 stone was probably where it was like he got diminishing returns, because he had knockout power whether he was 14-10 or whether he was 16-5.
Yeah.
Whereas the amount you lose in terms of your engine, your capacity to work at a higher rate, your speed, your reflexes, everything at 16.5 stone, it's not worth the extra maybe 2 or 3% power, which you have anyway. And I feel like with Joshua, maybe what we're seeing now is the optimum version of a guy who can move, who can hold himself well for 12 rounds,
107,
and can really bang.
Yeah, 100%. I think after this fight, and Joshua said that it's a new beginning, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whoever comes next, adapt to the guy, you know, who is going to be in front and be the best you can be, really. But I believe this way is where Joshua is probably going to be, because he looked so good, so relaxed, moving for 12 rounds as well, when a lot of people as well have been saying that he was gassing after 5 or 6 rounds. And look, I mean, Saturday performance is, wow.
The future's looking bright.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
Talk to me about Joshua, the man. So you've obviously got to know him very well, and I know you've become very fond of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously when you spend that much time and you invest that much personal of your skill set and your knowledge, you become close.
Yeah.
So talk to me about Joshua as a guy. What's he like? How's your friendship grown in the last 6 months?
Very good. I get on so well with him. You know, I mean, because for me, my job, yes, he's boxing coach, you know, boxer coach, but I go beyond that. You know, I need to have that connection with them, and that has to be getting into the friendship. Some people might not agree with it, but for me, it has to be like that. I have to have the connection, and I learn a lot from the man, you know, on a daily basis, how he talks, how he behaves, how he is as a human being, you know, because you see it from the outside and you go, oh, he can be like a different person as you actually meet in person, but it's exactly the same. With the man that you see from the cameras, is exactly the same. He treats me of sir. He calls me sir. Yes, sir. This is a very, very polite guy. And a guy of that kind of like name and how big he is to talk to you with that respect is, wow. I mean, I will always be forever grateful, you know, and I said it from day one. And during the camp, I always looked at him and I said, listen, man, you know, I will always be grateful to you. And I learn, as I teach him, I learn myself, you know. And the man is an absolutely amazing human being, amazing human being.
And so I imagine, given all that, when the final bell goes, and I mean, there was no doubt, you knew you'd won.
Yeah, because I just jumped into the ring straight.
Yeah, mate, you'd earned it. You'd earned it. I mean, I was just so, I had to have a couple of beers at home because just to take the edge off, mate. Just because, I guess, personally, like, I've known Rob for many years, I've known you recently, and I've met AJ countless times over the years, and he's always been so polite, so engaging. And every time I've seen him, the way he treats people around him, for me, whatever the criticism people want to lodge at him comes from problems in their lives. It's nothing that I've ever seen from him. And so how crucial a night that was for British boxing, as well as for a lot of the people that, you know, I personally care about. I was nervous. And so when that final bell went, But what was it for? What was it for you? Were you relieved? Were you just elated? How did you feel?
I knew he just won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Straight away.
Yeah.
I was just waiting just to kind of like 12 rounds, of course, just to actually say, and then you, and I just completely went mad, just jumping with all these friends around. I remember, I mean, after pretty much a minute of like that sort of hype, I just, you know, I just went on tears because it's the emotions, you know, it's the emotions of being away from my friends, from my family, to being in Sheffield in a place that I never had that, those kind of like 3 months pretty much away from everybody. All those emotions came in, and I remember looking down the side in the ring, and I saw David Cobo there. So I just went on to him, you know, and I said thank you to the man because he's been absolutely nothing but great to me, you know. And I spent a lot of time in the last few days with him in Saudi, and he teach me a lot, but not just boxing, you know, life in general. And
good bloke, mate.
Yeah, 100%.
One of my absolute faves. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
remember, you know, he gave my cuddle, and I just went in tears, man. And I just said, just like, thank you so much, man, because, and he said, be ready, you know, be ready. This is your time. And man, seriously. So I got to thank him, you know, for being absolutely nothing but real. And I'm pleased to meet that sort of like good people in life because I've got so much respect. And I'm expecting now to kind of, well, I'll go to Kazakhstan on Friday for Sultan Saobek. And then when I come back, I'll definitely need a long holiday.
Yeah.
So I'm planning to go to Dubai and talking to Cowell. I think he's going to be there as well. So I'm planning just to go and just like meet up, you know, go for dinner and just relax, you know, just like enjoy the company. And yeah. I'm thankful to the man, you know.
I'm glad you guys are friends because he's awesome, and he's a friend of mine too. And I rate him so highly as a coach. And
100%.
Yeah,
great talents in his gym as well.
Never know, maybe you guys end up working together at some point in the future. Who knows?
Kind of like dropped it. I remember, I think I said, you know, I was just like, you know, me and you. But then, you know, who will be the main main guy? But I don't think I will have a doubt. You know, I mean, in terms of kind of like, if that happens, you know. I would love to because I like the man. I truly like the man.
Yeah, good stuff. So where do you see yourself next year? Obviously, you've still got your stable of fighters that you're working with. I know there are a few other opportunities on the horizon for you, but with Team AJ, if they ask you to go back and work with him again, you would do that again?
Will he still be together? You know, I think he'll definitely need the rest now. And as soon as he is ready to get back into training, will he still be training, you know, doing work ongoing? And then when the next fight gets announced, you know, get the camp, but he would definitely be training way before that camp, and I will be there as long as Joby and Rob McCracken as well. So I'm just thankful, you know, to them for the opportunity, and also this time, because I won't be so much of a secret, you know, I could still
have
the time for my guys as well, because it's been hard, you know, it's been very hard for me in terms of like, Sultan is fighting for the WBC Asian title, and for me, to see the man not be next to me because I'm so close. The language is not there, but I'm so close to the man, you know. He's the love, and he was constantly texting me, you know, I need you. And I said, listen, man, this is just a one-off. And he'll gain from this as well, you know. For me to be with Joshua, you know, he's going to be some benefits for him as well. And I hope in the future, you know, we will just do something great, just like me, him, Joshua, Isaac and Sandy Ryan after the Olympics.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Well, I look forward to that, and best wishes to Sandy. And she's had a bit of a rocky 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, with injuries, but you know, she's mad talented.
Yeah.
You know, she knows what she needs to do. I believe in her from day one. I believe on her talent as well. And listen, her style, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's more professional, blah, blah, blah. But listen, I wish her the best of luck, you know, in the qualifiers. And I hope he makes Tokyo 220, which is always been her dream. And I really hope, you know, that he fulfill her dreams, really.
Yeah, me too. Mate, congratulations.
Chris, thank
and,
you so
and
much.
A Merry Christmas. I'm
thank
so pleased the year
me,
has ended on a high for you. You
thank
deserve
you
it, mate.
Me, man.
No, absolute pleasure. Right, I promise this is the last episode of the year, unless something mad happens and AJ walks in the door now. But I want to say a massive thank you to Angel Fernandez. As always, great to have your company here on TKO. We will We'll see you for sure in 2020. Merry Christmas, everybody, and we'll see you next year.
Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe.